This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr., who's traveling to cover college football this weekend. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline, and we're going to get there in a few to talk with Dolphins reporter Marcel Louis Jacques about what happened in Thursday Night Football last night. A lot to get to in today's show. We got to talk about Cam Newton and OBJ, two huge signings in the NFC. We'll get to how that affects the NFC playoff picture. But Amber, last night's loss by the Baltimore Ravens might be as bad as they come. I get all the excuses. It was a short week. They played an overtime game against the Minnesota Vikings, which happened to be a win, but it came down to the last second in overtime, so maybe you got some tired legs. The warm weather, the humidity down in Miami might not have been things that they were prepared for, but that was a sloppy football game for the Baltimore Ravens, and they left the door cracked open for the Miami Dolphins to win that ball game, and Brian Flores' group took full advantage of it.
They did take full advantage of it. I think that if we talk about the Ravens' collapse, and there's plenty to talk about there because the Ravens did not play a good game last night on any front. I mean, even Justin Tucker had a rough game last night for the Ravens, right? Like when he comes out and he misses that 48-yarder, maybe that should have been a sign of things to come for the Ravens, that it just was not going to work for them on any front last night. But I think when we do that, we take something away from what the Dolphins did last night, because although the Dolphins have not done much well at all this season thus far, last night would be the exception to that rule. They really, really put it up an impressive showing defensively. And I think that Flores deserves a lot of credit for that in a season where, frankly, he hasn't gotten much credit for anything, and it's justified. But last night, defensively, the Dolphins looked great.
No question about it. And I think that has to be the story about it. Brian Flores' defense actually resembling more of what we thought they would be coming into this season, right? They were a 10-win team from a year ago, largely based on what that defense was able to do and their ability to take the football away, and that showed up in big ways in that game last night. You talk about the takeaway that they had to strip on Sammy Watkins, that Xavier Howard took back to the house for a touchdown, and then that late-game interception in the red zone off of Lamar Jackson. Those are huge plays that had a lot to say about the outcome of it, but just from an X's and O's standpoint, I thought Brian Flores was masterful in being able to come up with some blitzes and zero pressures to really impact that Baltimore Ravens offense and make Lamar Jackson and that run game a little bit stagnant. And I think when you do that with the Baltimore Ravens, that's when it becomes tough for them to be able to create positive momentum on the offensive side of the ball. We saw they were able to sack Lamar Jackson four times. He's not used to being in that situation where he's feeling that much pressure. But again, I think that's a product of not being able to establish the run, not being able to have that balance. And the Miami Dolphins defense was able to create a lot of negative plays and then some takeaways in some key spots in that game.
Yeah, you said some blitzes. Chris, that might be the understatement of the year. I mean, the Dolphins D-backs blitzed Jackson a total of 24 times. That's the most in an NFL game since 2015. The Dolphins' game plan last night was just pressure, 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 and more pressure. But I think the most important component of that was that Lamar didn't escape the blitz using his leg and do any of those big plays that we're used to seeing him do. And maybe some of that had something to do as well with, like you said, the shortened week, the overtime victory there where they would have tired legs. And so maybe there was some of that that was affecting him. But really, overall, I just think it was a really good performance by the Dolphins, a very good game plan. And Brian Flores has obviously had the Ravens circled on his calendar since they came in and stomped that Dolphins team at Hard Rock last season, and this was the revenge game for them. And he certainly did get it last night in a surprising fashion, because everybody, I mean, hundreds of experts counted the Dolphins out in this one. But that's what's great about the NFL.
Amber Wilson, Chris Canty on Canty and Golic and Jr. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Call us at 888-779-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football is heating up, and the fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And Amber, in terms of what Brian Flores did in that defense, we got to give them credit. The two safeties I thought were the stars of that defense last night, Brandon Jones and Javon Holland. I thought it was a coming out party for Holland last night. he was all over the field creating havoc, negative plays, pressuring Lamar Jackson, tip passes, being able to knock down passes at the point of attack when it came to high pointing those balls, those 50-50 balls that Jackson hung up there. So I thought that defense was masterful in terms of their performance, but just the X's and O's. Brian Flores bringing all those guys up on the line of scrimmage, making sure that they were gapped out, talking Greg Roman and that Ravens offense out of the run game, I thought that was huge in terms of being able to dictate the complexion of what that game would look like offensively for Baltimore. And we're not used to seeing too many teams do that. I mean, it comes along with a lot of risk coming up with all of those pressures and playing zero coverage on the back end. Because, Amber, as you know, if the Ravens hit any of those receivers and one of those guys makes a defensive back miss, that play is out the gate into the house. But last night, you got to credit those guys on the back end for being able to hold up in zero coverage and make tackles when the Ravens did have some completions and get those guys on the ground and live to fight another down. I thought that was the biggest difference in the game. The Ravens offense, their passing attack, not being able to make enough of those big plays in the passing game to talk Brian Flores in that Miami Dolphins defense out of zero pressures.
I can't believe we're talking positively about the Miami Dolphins. Like, I don't even know what to do with my hands, Chris. This is so strange that I'm getting to talk positively about my Miami Dolphins here in 2021. It has been far and few between. And there are criticisms to be had last night with the Dolphins as well. The decision not to start to it, that's a strange one. But I don't even want to harp on that because you're right. What Flores put together defensively was masterful. You mentioned Holland there. He said it's the most fun he's ever had after the game. And it did look like that D was having a ton of fun out there. 10 points, that is the fewest points the Ravens have ever scored with Jackson as their starting quarterback. So it was a stunning loss in stunning fashion and really just a stifling performance from that Dolphins defense. But nobody had more fun than Robert Hunt last night. I mean, nobody. Like the highlight of that game... it was the best touchdown ever scored that doesn't count, right? And it's an O-lineman is the highlight of that game. And I will say this, and obviously Golic's not here today, but Golic and I have gone back and forth many times over the Dolphins O-line. I am a unfortunate member of Dolphins O-line Twitter and got into Dolphins O-line battles defending the Dolphins O-line last season, which has been very regrettable for me this season, the way things have gone. But Robert Hunt, He just made it all worthwhile. Like, all the defending I did of a really terrible O-line, frankly, last season and this season, it was all justified last night in that moment when I watched the big man rumble down the field and stretch out with such grace. It was like a ballerina just toppling in the air, but still managed to stretch out the athleticism. That was Robert Hunt's moment. They should have given him 6, even if he was ineligible.
Exactly, man. I mean, that had to be a crushing moment when he realized that none of that effort that he put out there on that screen pass actually counted because he was an ineligible receiver and nobody had tipped the pass before he caught it. I was just hoping on replay that somebody from the Baltimore Ravens would have tipped it just so the big man could get some extra credit with that touchdown because the effort was absolutely there. But it's a sad state of affairs for the Dolphins offense when that's the highlight of the night for that unit. I'm just saying, Amber.
It is.
I'm just saying.
You have a point. I think we'll still take it right now, but you do have a point that the fact that that's probably like the defining play of the Dolphins. It's the best play of the Dolphins season, and it didn't count for anything. But boy, it was fun while it lasted. And you and I talked in the pre-show meeting. I said, how could he have possibly not realized he was ineligible? Like, look at what position you play, bro. I mean, unless he thought it was tipped, but how could you not realize what was happening? And he did say after the game that he didn't know what was going through his head, that it was just like the ball was there. He didn't plan to catch it, but it was just there. He caught it and he was like, well, I got it. I might as well try to make something out of it. And he tried.
He tried. I got to give him credit for at least giving the effort out there. So no doubt, fun win for the Dolphins last night. Not so much for the Ravens. But coming up next, does last night help change the narrative around Tua and Brian Flores? We'll ask our Dolphins reporter after this word from Vivid Seats. With the safe return of live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop, every one-timer, and every toe-tap grab can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you got to do is collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. It's that easy. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered all the events that matter to you. So grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, Life happens live.
I just figured the same repeat performance was coming based on the way the Dolphins was playing. It did happen that way.
Stunning loss.
They made a lot of plays. We made a lot of plays. They made some plays.
When you lose like this, the first thing you got to do is look in the mirror and figure out, you know, what can I do to get better to help this team win the football game next week.
Bottom line is this falls squarely on me as the head coach. We were not prepared.
All right, right now let's go out to the Goodyear hotline and bring on ESPN Dolphins reporter Marcel Luis Jock. And Marcel, the Dolphins got a big win last night against a very good Ravens team. Was there a sense of belief from this team coming into that game that they could get the job done?
Yeah, we kept hearing from them week after week for maybe the past month that they're close. They're right there. They almost have it. And you saw legitimate signs of life when they lost to the Bills there in week 8, holding them to 122 yards. In the first half, you got the feeling like, okay, maybe they're not, it's not just all coach speak. Maybe they are close to something here. And you saw them really put it all together last night. You saw just a joyous team. You saw a loose team, but still an aggressive team, you know, from top to bottom, from the play calling to the actual execution. It was just all around. It's probably the best win that this team has had in the past, you know, couple years, and arguably one of, if not the best, under Brian Flores.
Yeah, Marcel, I don't want to spend this interview with negativity for my Miami Dolphins because I haven't gotten a lot of opportunity to speak positively about them this season. But I do want to ask you about the one component that we can be critical coming out of that win last night, and that is still the quarterback position, because Tua did not start that game. He certainly looked like he could have started that game once he got into the game in the second half. What was Flores' explanation for not starting him sooner after the game when obviously he could make those throws with that finger? And then also, it did appear that he hit that finger last night. I know they have 10 days rest. What's his status moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's still going to be day-to-day moving forward, but I think if we learned, and if Brian Flores learned anything last night, it's that he's going to be fine through this injury, that they can still win games as he's dealing with this finger. But the explanation was that Tua just didn't have that same. It just wasn't – he was struggling to throw the ball downfield and really drive the ball downfield. And they figured, you know, they felt good enough that he could, you know, manage a game in a pinch, but that they wanted a fully healthy Jacoby Brissett. The problem here, though, is even a hobbled Tua Tagovailoa is a better option than a healthy Jacoby Brissett. You know, as nice of a person as Jacoby is, Tua is the better quarterback, injured or not. And that, you know, we heard Brian say that they want to protect Tua from himself because, you know, 23-year-old kid, he's going to want to play no matter what. But it kind of comes to a point where this is your starting quarterback. This is a guy you took fifth overall. If you can't trust him to go when he says he can go, then I don't know what you think you have here. So I think that we've seen the last of this little, you know, back and forth, wishy-washy, who's going to start. I think it's Tua unless he physically cannot grip the football.
Kenny and Golic Jr. talking with ESPN Dolphins reporter Marcel Luis Jock. And it's time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Marcel, a lot of conversation has been around who the Dolphins quarterback of the future is. But now the talk around town has kind of been amplified when it comes to the job security of head coach Brian Flores. Does last night's win change his fortunes in any tangible way?
I don't think, you know, if they lose out from here, I don't think they're going to say, you know, well, okay, we would have fired you, but you beat the Ravens. But what I think this does do is this gives them a win that they shouldn't have won, if that makes sense. This is one matchup on paper where everybody was penciling them in for a loss. So if he goes throughout the rest of the season and they win the games they're supposed to, they've got – the Jets coming up. They've got the Panthers after. They've got the Giants. They got a bye week. They got the Jets again. They got the Saints after that. Who knows what we're seeing out of New Orleans, considering their quarterback situation right now. There's a chance that they could be at 500 by the time that week 16 games against New Orleans comes around. And from there, it's a matter of, can you beat the Saints? Can you beat the Titans? Can you beat the Patriots and grab another one of these wins that you, quote unquote, aren't supposed to have? So I think this goes a long way toward securing his seat for the next year. But I think even in the best case scenario, because of the seven losses that piled up so quickly this year, he's going to enter the 2022 season with the hottest seat in the NFL and the shortest leash in the NFL. So I think they need to finish strong, and last night went a long way toward doing that.
Well, finishing strong has been something he's been capable of. Starting slow also seems to be a theme so far with Flores. But in those matchups moving forward, as they try to finish strong here, should passes to Robert Hunt be part of the game plan?
I thought that was I really had to question myself. That was one of those moments where it seemed so natural that I thought I might be wrong. I was like, I don't remember hearing him being declared eligible before the game or before the snap. He just went and plucked it out of the air. It was really funny. You know, we spoke with him last night, and to his credit, he answered about 15 rapid-fire questions about this play. To hear him tell it, he just blacked out. He saw the ball, and he made a business decision there. But I wouldn't be surprised. Christian Wilkins kind of has that, that big guy hybrid role locked down, but he might have a run for his money here.
Marcel, last one from me. The Dolphins had a clear plan on how to attack Lamar Jackson, 25 blitzes on 48 dropbacks. How much of that game plan was dictated the outcome, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah, and it wasn't just 25 blitzes. 24 of those were defensive back blitzes specifically. It's the most that any quarterback has faced since 2015. 20 pressures on Lamar, the most he's ever faced in his career. And this was the most, back against the wall, nothing to lose game plan I think I've ever seen out of a team that I covered. When you're sitting here, you're at 2-7. You're playing arguably the best team in the AFC. Why not just send all your horses? You know what I mean? Why not just go cover zero, engage eight over and over and over again until they prove they can beat it? And Baltimore never proved that they could beat it, which is so ironic, because if any team should figure out how to beat cover zero blitz, you would think it would be the Ravens, who, you know, that's their bread and butter. But no, it completely dictated the outcome of the game. Baltimore couldn't get anything going. This is the second-ranked offense in the NFL. And to be quite honest, I didn't see much difference between that opponent last night and the opponent that Miami faced last week in the Texans. That defense made them look about the same, and I think that is not a fluke. Like I said earlier in our conversation, this is something that's been building since that Bills game in week 8. And so I'm more inclined to say this was a long time coming rather than a fluky performance. I think that this defense is starting to figure it out. I think this coaching staff is starting to get back to what made it successful in 2020. And I think that is a positive sign for them moving forward.
Yeah, this is what we expected to see from this D, I think, far earlier in the season. Javon Holland said, Marcel, last night, that last night was the most fun he's ever had. Obviously, a coming out party for him. I think it seems like a lot of guys were having a lot of fun, particularly on defense last night. How important was this win overall, do you think, for morale moving forward?
Oh, it's big. We heard Eric Rowe speak after last week's win. And, just about the what a win like that means to them, snapping a seven-game losing streak. And he said it's validating, because you put in so much work and so much effort throughout the week after week, and you're not seeing the results of that. It kind of weighs down on you. These guys are still human at the end of the day. You kind of start thinking, wow, what's the point? You lose motivation, you lose confidence. So I think kind of seeing to borrow an analogy from another sport, seeing that ball go in the hoop is critical for them moving forward, critical for this team's psyche. And I think that, they've been preaching for the past couple months throughout that losing streak that all they really needed to do was win a game. There was no secret sauce. There's no special formula. They just needed to see that ball go through the hoop. And I think Thursday night, we saw what can happen once that mentality changes and once that hump has been climbed over.
Marcel, we appreciate a few minutes. Thanks for jumping on with us and helping us break down last night's win for the Dolphins.
Of course, man. I haven't been able to talk about a whole lot of wins, man, so I'm kind of excited.
Well, enjoy it over the long weekend, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
All right, man. You have a good one, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's ESPN Dolphins reporter Marcel Luis. Jock, coming up next, last night's proves that the AFC continues to be an enigma. Who are the true contenders in that conference? We'll tell you next. This is Kenny and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Kenny, Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. And Amber, last night's loss by the Baltimore Ravens got us to thinking, just who exactly is the best team in the AFC? And it's been from a week-to-week proposition. We've been trying to figure it out. We thought it was once upon a time the Buffalo Bills. But you can't be considered the best team in the AFC if you lose to the worst team in the conference, which is the Jacksonville Jaguars. So with the win over the Rams last Sunday night, do we have to call the Tennessee Titans the best team in the AFC?
I think so. But it's confusing because obviously what they do going into Los Angeles is really, really impressive without Derrick Henry. The problem is, of course, moving forward, they're without Derrick Henry. And they're not just without Derrick Henry. Like, they've ruled out three guys, I think, this week ahead of their matchup with the Saints. I believe Tannehill is dealing with some sort of illness as well. So at some point he was questionable, although I think he is going to get the go. So it has been an injury-prone week in particular and month in particular for the Tennessee Titans. And I don't know if that ends up catching up with them, but for right now, as we sit here today, you mentioned the Bills against the Jags. Obviously, what we saw last night with the Ravens and the Dolphins, like, you can't give it to either of those teams. I think it's got to be Titans unless you're a believer in the Chargers, but the Chargers have been pretty inconsistent so far this season.
Yeah, I think any power rankings when it comes to AFC teams has to start with the Tennessee Titans at the top. They've won four consecutive games against playoff teams from a year ago, and the last three teams to do that in the NFL all made Super Bowl appearances. So I got to give the nod to them. And then catching.
Do you believe, real quick, though, do you believe they can do it without Derrick Henry, though? I mean, like, the Titans are a very good team. And one of the things that encourages me is that their defense continues to improve by leaps and bounds every week, every game. But missing Derrick Henry just feels like such a huge loss to me that I'm concerned about their real chances here, you know, in a playoff type scenario.
Well, here's the thing. I think they're going to be in position to compete for a championship just by virtue of the schedule and the division that they play in. I mean, right now they're three games clear of the Indianapolis Colts in the win column, and it's really like a four-game lead because they beat them head-to-head twice already this season. So when you look at the upcoming schedule, they're going to catch the New Orleans Saints with Alvin Kamara banged up, potentially being out of that game. And then they've got four dates left with the Houston Texans, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Miami Dolphins. They play Houston twice. So, I mean, this is a team that's going to get to 11 or 12 wins and have an opportunity to flirt with having the number one seed in the conference. So, Derrick Henry or no, I think they'll be positioned to be able to go on a little bit of run, And as you mentioned, with that defense, the way that they can put pressure on opposing quarterbacks with their four-man rush, I think is what's going to separate them from some of the other teams in the conference. What they did to Matt Stafford on Sunday night, being able to rush for DeNico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons. Jeffrey Simmons was the best defensive player on the field. And you can't say that very many times when you're talking about playing against the Rams with Aaron Donald on the other sideline. But that was the case on Sunday night. So if Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry and DeNico Autry and those guys can continue to get after it the way they have all season long with just a four-man rush and they can play coverage with the back seven, that's going to be a tough out for any team. And they've shown themselves to be a little more opportunistic when it comes to the takeaways of late. So I'm buying into the hype train of the Tennessee Titans. I think this is going to be a team that's going to be there in the end when it's all said and done. Now, I do think there are some other teams that are going to have something to say about the hierarchy in the AFC once we get to the end of the regular season. I still believe in the Baltimore Ravens because they can run the football and they have a singular talent, unique talent in Lamar Jackson, who is still in the conversation for MVP as far as I'm concerned. And then I think the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen. Josh Allen had picked the worst time to have the worst game of the season down there in Jacksonville, but he was still playing at a really, really high level. I expect him to get back to that type of production. And their defense, the Bills' defense, has shown their ability to be consistent all year long. So I think those are the other two teams that I would keep my eye on in terms of the group of teams that I would expect to make a run at the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, the Bills, I'm not ready to sound the alarm on the Bills. I mean, I know they haven't played well recently and obviously that game against the Jags, but it seems like that's going to happen. I mean, hopefully that has that. You just mentioned the Titans schedule and how easy it is through that East here on out, except for, you know, all you have to do is cough up one or two of those and it looks not so easy anymore. I mean, that's what happened to the Bills when they ran into the Jags, right? Like, that's what happened to the Ravens last night when they run into the Dolphins. And that is somewhat of just the story of the NFL. I'm not ready to sound the alarms on the Bills here. I mean, they need to actually run the ball more. They need to find some more consistency. There are some areas there to improve, but I think they're still a good Buffalo team. I'm with you on the Ravens. Like, even though I watched what happened last night and what the Dolphins did to the Ravens last night, and it was a heck of a game plan, I'm not ready to be out even on Lamar as an MVP. A lot of people might be out on him after last night, except for, you know, it was a game, and I think it was more on the coaching staff last night and having that team ready than it was really even on Lamar. You saw Lamar get visibly upset last night with his receivers. I don't remember seeing that previously this season. Like, it was just a bad game for everybody on that Ravens team last night, and I don't think that just falls on the shoulders of Lamar. So if he does spectacular things like we know he can do through the rest of the season, who knows where he'll end up in terms of that MVP conversation. People want to hand it to Aaron Rodgers, and that dude just missed a game. We know everything what's happening with him, and he may not even play this
weekend. Yeah, good luck with him winning an MVP award ever again, too, by the way. That he pulled.
Well, and probably not, but people are saying, I mean, people are still having him as a favorite for their pick. I keep hearing it all over the place. And so if that's true, if you're going to have him in the conversation, then obviously you can have Lamar Jackson in the conversation, even if a bad Dolphins team was able to dismantle him on any given Thursday, which is what happened last night in the NFL. It's funny because when we talk about Lamar Jackson, it's like everyone's always waiting with Lamar to figure him out. So now the Flores figured him out. All you have to do is blitz him 500,000 times in a game, and then all of a sudden, Lamar won't be able to do anything to you. And we know that's not the case. Every time a team thinks they have Lamar Jackson figured out, he finds a way to remind us, hey, I'm still Lamar Jackson, and I'm still in the MVP conversation, whether you like it or not. And I think Lamar is going to go on to, again, remind us of that this season. So I'm not out on the Ravens yet. I'm not out on the Bills yet. I think the Titans right now deserve the credit at the top of that conference. And I'm a little less confident there in the Chargers, who I don't even think we've thrown into this conversation yet.
Yeah, there's a whole nother group of teams that I would, you know, kind of consider for, you know, that last two spots. If we're rounding out the top five in the AFC, you got the Chargers, you got the Raiders, you got the Chiefs, you got the Patriots, you got the Browns. I'm not ready to crown any of those teams and say they belong in the top five. Although what happens in week 10 will go a long ways into clarifying the picture in terms of where they stand in the conference. But coming up next, is there an actual quarterback controversy brewing in New York? You'll hear from Zach Wilson, who weighed in on the situation next. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Give us a call at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We want to hear from you. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. And Amber, we were talking a little bit about this during our production meeting, but it feels like there could be a little bit of a quarterback controversy brewing in New York with the Jets. Now, I'm not saying it's a full-blown controversy as of yet, but all of the things coming out of Florham Park sound like the coaching staff and the locker room want to give Mike White every opportunity to earn the starting job. And I know they're saying it's a day-to-day, week-to-week proposition, but it just feels like, from based on everything that we're hearing, that everyone is aligned with supporting Mike White and seeing exactly what he's capable of doing.
Well, everyone's aligned inside that locker room, right? You're telling me that the reports coming out of that locker room, or that everyone inside the locker room, is just chanting, Mike White, Mike White. And what is Zach Wilson doing as everyone in the locker room who he plays with is chanting for the backup quarterback? That has to be an awkward, unfortunate situation for Zach Wilson to be in. What I want to know, though, is Mike White really that beloved inside that locker room? Like, they just like that dude so much? Or is it because he's Mike White? Like, he's the backup quarterback who none of us expected to be good, and it's a fun story, and it's even a fun story inside that locker room. Like, are they rooting for him because they really think he's the better match, or are they rooting for him because it's fun to root for him? Like, how we were all rooting for Robert Hunt last night when the big guy is making the touchdown, and now we want more of that. None of us want more of that because we actually think Robert Hunt is the best receiver option for the Miami Dolphins, because it seems like you're in a bad position if you want to be throwing passes to one of your guards. But we want it because it's a fun story, and that's why we're rooting for it. Is that why we're rooting for Mike White here and even inside the locker room? Because
well, Amber, I'll say this. I think there could be a little bit of that at play, but I also think that there are a lot of guys in that locker room that feel like Mike White gives them the best chance to win. And we heard from Jets guard Greg Van Roten, and he said one of the criticisms that he had about Zach Wilson was that he didn't take the plays that were there to be made, that it was too much trying to hit a home run, not enough trying to take the base hits that are allowed. We heard the same thing from Rob Saleh after the Colts game when it came to the style of play and just taking the throws that were there to be made and not trying to go over the top every single time. The offense looks more like what Mike LaFleur and Rob Saleh envisioned under Mike White in the 2.5 games that he's been the starting quarterback for the New York Jets. And it hasn't necessarily worked out for Zach Wilson when he's been in the lineup. I mean, right up until he got hurt against the Patriots, he was leading the NFL in interceptions. And now you're talking about, in a matter of 3 games, the backup quarterbacks for the Jets having more touchdown passes on the season than Zach does. So I think there is something to be said for the production and then guys actually having a chance to be competitive and win games with Mike White in the lineup. That Cincinnati Bengals upset win goes a long ways to instilling confidence in the locker room that Mike White is the guy that gives them the best chance to be able to win games. But let's hear from Zach Wilson and what he had to say about the quarterback situation. Here's Zach Wilson on the back and forth between him and Mike White.
You've been the starter almost basically since the moment you were drafted. I mean, it's been pretty obvious. Does it concern you at all now that there's some uncertainty in that?
No, definitely not. And the reason is I've only played 5 games. You know, I just got here. You know, I'm supposed to be a senior in college right now. You know, like, you got to understand it's going to be hard. And I'm not making any excuses, but that's where growth comes. You know, I look back at my college career, and you know, the year before I got there, we were 4-9. We went 7-6 twice, and then we had an 11-1 season. I mean, that's how football goes. You have to go through adversity to get where you want to go. So, you know, I definitely didn't come here thinking, you know, this is going to be the greatest thing ever and we're going to go undefeated. You know, I knew it was going to be tough. And that's part of the process. That's what makes football so fun. So my time's going to come.
You hope your time is going to come.
Right.
You hope it comes, but you also know that, and every football player knows this story, Amber, the story of Wally Pipp. Yeah, everybody knows about what happened with Wally Pipp. He had a cold. Lou Gehrig stepped in. He never got his job back. Like, every football player has been told that story by his coach at some level, whether it's high school, college, or the pros. And so it's not necessarily a given that you're going to lose your job because of injury, but it can happen to players. Now, it seems like it's a little far-fetched when you're talking about the number 2 overall pick, but I think what makes this situation unique is that Mike White is young enough to be a viable option for the Jets long-term if he goes out there and consistently proves it from week to week.
Yeah, no one wants to get Wally Pipped, that's for sure. And, you know, down in Miami when I was covering the Dolphins, we obviously had a situation last season between Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And this one feels different, though, because even though Flores was toggling those quarterbacks back and forth, it didn't really make any sense what he was doing other than trying to win games. But it didn't make any sense in terms of the future, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is too old to be the future for the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Here, Mike White is not. Mike White's only 26. So theoretically, if you find a diamond in the rough, then sure, he could be your quarterback of the future. That is what makes this situation much more interesting.
Absolutely. And so all eyes and ears will be on MetLife Stadium when the New York Jets take on the Buffalo Bills, the Mike White-led New York Jets.
But Zach Wilson said everything right, by the way, in that.
I think he said exactly what he had to say. I'm not sure how much of that he actually believed, so we'll see. But coming up next, there's a pretty big game this weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, and our next guest will tell you all about it. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.